Hi there, my name is Lee Mottershead and I have a confession to make. Never in my now many centuries as a racing journalist have I known a week in which there were so many major news stories breaking in the course of such a short time. And in this particular edition of The Front Page, we will be discussing those stories, and the we who will be doing the discussing are myself and my esteemed colleagues, Mr. Peter Scargill and Mr. Chris Cook. I've never known a week like it. Pete, have you known a week like it?
No, and I've known a lot of weeks like you. I'm a veteran of this industry. So no, it was remarkable. It was one punch after the other through the whole week, wasn't it?
It was. Chris, unprecedented?
Probably. Yeah. I haven't done my homework on that one, I must admit. No. There were some weeks when, I don't know if you remember, we would sometimes show up at the Old Bailey.
And those various
racing people would be called as witnesses, and you know there were some quite fruity headlines in those times. But we've, I think we've collectively agreed to kind of draw a veil, haven't we, and move on. Biggest week since then, anyway.
Yeah, so collectively, none of us have known a week like it, and we'll be discussing that week in a second. But before we do, the Racing Post app has changed the way in which we present you race cards. They now look very, very exciting indeed. More on that here.
You spoke. We listened. Introducing Race Cards Redefined. Three brand new and unique race cards tailored for your needs. Our new and improved standard race card is the punter's favourite and is everything you need to make your selection. Get the maximum amount of information in the palm of your hand with Expert View. Cover all areas and get all the same information as our newspaper. With Compact View, you can make a quick decision on who to back. View more runners and more odds on one race. Which race card will you choose?
So we are going to crack off this week with the world's most famous horse race, undoubtedly the signature horse race for the sport in this part of the world. That is the Grand National, and in April 2024, Chris Cook, it is going to look a bit different.
Yeah, we're going to have maximum 34 runners from now on. To a lot of people, it might not look all that different. I feel really sad about it. Not just the outcome, but the way it's been gone about. So I got into racing and the Grand National back in 1984, which just so happens to have been the year when they last cut the safety limit for the National from 50 runners down to 40. That wasn't really a cut, that was more of an acceptance of reality, because they hadn't even been getting 40 for some of the races in the 15 years that led up to that decision. And in fact, that was a great time for the race, because the Jockey Club were heroes. They just paid the property developer something like $3.4 million, which was worth having in 1984, to buy Aintree and save the race. And I still feel very positively about the Jockey Club in terms of what they do for horse racing. I mean, amazing things, really. All the race courses are well run, and Lambourne and Newmarket are amazing places because of their investment. But they do sometimes play a bit fast and loose with the sports heritage. We saw with Kempton a few years ago, which is another thing that people have agreed to kind of forget. They did suddenly put out a press release, if you remember, saying, we're going to build on Kempton and we're going to use the money to invest in Newmarket. And that hasn't happened, but I was reminded of that last week when we suddenly got this press release going, by the way, six runners less in the Grand National from now on. The BHA led quite a detailed review into the Grand National a dozen years ago, which produced a 55-page report, a really sort of serious bit of work, when, amongst other things, they looked at, should we cut the field size for the Grand National? And they looked at footage of every faller and every unseat from 2000 to 2011 in the races involving professional jockeys over the national fences, and concluded that there was really no cause to say that, you know, cutting the field size was going to make any difference. They reckoned that, you know, none of those horses had really been unsighted, and fewer runners would not have prevented what happened to them from happening. Then we get this press release last week, as I say, a Jockey Club-led initiative on this occasion. It seems like we're in a different era with the BHA. They're not asserting the kind of control that they did over the sport back in those days. This is more the sort of Julie Harrington, laissez-faire, hands-off issue. The Jockey Club have been allowed to sort of run this show themselves. And again, we've just suddenly got this press release saying, this is what we're going to do. and nothing like as much shown in the way of working out.
No.
You know, there's no data that you can interrogate. There's no sort of detailed reasoning. They're just saying, well, this is what we decided after a review of various things, and this is what we're going to do. And it's unlike the Kempton thing, where it just didn't happen over a period of years. This is something that will happen, and there's nothing you can do about it, and it will never be reversed, because once you've cut the number of runners in the race, like the Grand National, you're never going to be allowed to put them back up again. I just don't think that's something that any official would ever contemplate. You're losing a great deal, and we're in an era of super trainers now where you know, they're just becoming more and more dominant, and nothing is being done to tackle that, so it will only go on being more and more the case. And if you cut runners out of a race like the Grand National, it's going to be easier for the big-time trainers to dominate. And the incentive is right there, because it's a huge prize money race. So we're losing those sort of interesting, colourful stories that sometimes sneak in at the bottom of the field. Horses like Manila Times that gave Rachel Blackmore her success. Foynaven wouldn't have got into the race if it had been 34 runners.
I
fear that we're going to get some unintended consequences. One of which I think will be that the race loses some of its colour, loses some of its popular appeal. But it's going to be very hard in the long run to separate out whatever happens to the race. It's going to be hard to attribute that to particular causes, because they're doing other things as well. There are other changes that are happening. And there will always be sort of that ability to argue about, oh, well, yes, it's declined in popularity, but that's because. I think, you know, in the long run, this is not going to be good news for the races standing with the public. This is going to diminish its popular appeal. It certainly makes the idea of the National in the future less attractive to me as a fan of the sport and as a punter. I respect absolutely the motivation that they want to do things to improve safety and to get the animal rights law off our case. But I fear that this is going to be damaging to the race itself and ineffective in terms of promoting safety.
Mm. Lots of points to pick up there. I suppose just on one point, in terms of the animal rights law, I suppose the Jockey Club would say that they're not really aiming any of this at the extreme end of the animal rights.
Well, I mean, they have to say that. Yeah. But I think realistically, you know, historians 50 years from now are going to put those two things together, aren't they? They're going to say there was this enormous protest.
You can't separate the two, regardless how you try and right. Okay. Yeah, like you say. 118 people arrested, race delayed, and all of the links around that.
Because of that, if I was running the show, I'd be saying, well, look, you know, we don't do things just because guys invade our course and break the law. We're not going to be changing stuff just because they say so. I think this would have been a really good time to sort of show some strength, show some faith in the race, and say, you know, for at least one more year, we're going to run it as it was, because there was a real sense, I think, in April that protest affected what happened afterwards. You know, there was a kind of a rush to get the race started.
Sandy Thompson said, didn't he? His was got hyper Hill 16, got hyper in that thing, and the first two or three fences, maybe even four fences, were pretty messy, weren't they? They were an unpleasant watch.
It was difficult to watch, but I think that must have been affected to some degree by what happened. So then you try and have a normal National next year and respond to that, I think, rather than the outlier. Anyway, we are where we are.
Before picking some of the points relating to the reduced field size, in general terms, is it fair to say that there seems to be a consensus opinion that in terms of the other significant headline changes, bringing the first fence close to the start, bringing the off time forward, standing start, shaving a bit off that the ditch beyond Valentine's, there's generally been consensus that, okay, yeah, we think these are good ideas. Is that fair?
I think that is fair. I mean, I think not everybody's saying that they're all going to work, but they're definitely worth trying.
Okay.
But then some people are saying, and this is something I have some time for, if you try to do all of these things at once and then it goes well or it goes badly, you know, well, you how do you attribute the cause?
Absolutely.
You know, what's working and what's not?
That's a fair point. Pete, in terms of the reduced field size, so initially on Thursday, I was feeling pretty despondent to an extent, and I was feeling ever more that the Grand National needed luck on its side going forward, which I think is still the case.
Yeah.
But then I looked and read what a lot of people said, and I was struck by, as I said in the column today, I can't think of many issues that have divided what I will call the sports most sensible thinkers. You know, there's people that you respect saying one thing and people you respect saying completely the other. And I suppose on reflection, I'm thinking that going forward, will people really notice a difference between 40 and 34? If the Grand National is the one race that attracts an audience way beyond our sport, you know, if you were asking those people that only watch horse racing once a year, that only bet on horse racing once a year, and you'd said to them, how many runners in the Grand National? Would they have known it was 40? Will they know it's 34 this year? Will that impact them? Would they have noticed in 1996 when only 27 horses ran in the Grand National that year? Is there a danger that we make too much of the reduced field size?
Very possibly, although the fact that there was 40 runners going over these fences was part of its appeal to a lot of people. And I think Chris is right that you're going to be losing out a lot of the potentially losing out the more interesting stories, aren't you, down towards the bottom. So it could be that they don't necessarily notice the reduction in the field size, but they might notice the reduction in who's taking part in the race.
Yeah.
You know, it might be it's four for Mullins, six for Elliott, four for Henry de Bromhead, that sort of thing. So there's less variety. Oh, you know, these guys seem to have most. It might be that sort of thing, because it's going to be a classier race, isn't it? You know, they've lifted up the bottom racing, for example.
Yeah.
You know, those sorts of things, it's going to be a better race.
And that has been a long-term conscious aim, hasn't it? In terms of the way that Phil Smith started handicapping the race slightly differently, the increased prize money. If you put up £1 million, you would expect to get a classier race.
I think that sort of aim goes back a long way, even back to the sort of the 80s. You know, there was a sort of conscious decision. Can we upgrade the quality of horses?
That's not a bad thing,
No, and classy horses run faster.
Well, there's the downside, isn't it? And but that's, I think, why they felt they had to make the fences a bit more inviting would be one euphemism for it. But then once you've done that, again, they're free to go faster.
And that's, I thought, hasn't really been covered much, but I think that's an interesting point too, in that the fences have become easier to jump.
Yeah.
And now that, in one sense, but in most senses, is clearly a very good thing, except in that smaller fences encourage speed.
Yeah.
But as you made that point about once you've reduced the field, you can never go back. If clever people in this review had said, well, actually, if we increase the size of the first couple of fences so the horses back off them a bit more, jockeys back off them a bit more, that might be a good idea. You can never go down that line.
Absolutely never going to happen. And I don't regret the middle being taken out, you know, the timber
core. No, not at all.
Because, I mean, those rotational falls that we were never...
Absolutely.
Just awful to look at. And I mean, objectively, from where we are now, it's hard to believe that was ever thought to be a good idea. Let's put a bunch of, you know, tree logs in the middle of these fences and hope for the best. But you do need the jockeys on side, and this is something that I think needs to be worked on, because in the race that we just saw in April, there's an awful lot of jockeys heading towards the inside from an early stage in the race, and they're, you know, if everybody does that, there just isn't room.
And they do that because the inside, you see the brave man's route with bigger drops at beaches, etc., but that isn't the case anymore.
No, exactly. So you don't pay the same penalty for going down the under that you used to be worried about. Back in sort of 2013, the first year after they changed the fences, the year after, you know, poor synchronized died in the race, I felt, you know, across the whole of the sport, there was a real focus on, you know, getting a trouble-free Grand National and making this work. And that was the year, you'll remember, of course, they cleared the first seven fences, I think, without a single unseated or fallen, just nothing. Yeah. And not only that, but when they all cleared beachers and the commentator said as much, there was a big cheer from the crowd. Yes. I mean, just stuff that's never happened before. They all clear the first seven fences and people are cheering specifically for that. Extraordinary stuff. And we got sort of 6 years in a row where there were no fatalities. But I just wonder if, you know, with the passage of time, you know, there's some focus somewhere that's been lost that we need to regain, perhaps including the, you know, jockeys buying in to making sure these races are as safe as they possibly can be. Because when I went back and looked at the jockeys that rode in the race this year, I think there was only three or four of them who'd been riding 10 years before, you know, in that atmosphere of 2013. We've had a lot of sort of high-profile retirements since then, one reason and another. You've got a different cohort of jockeys. And, you know, I know that they do talk to them, you know, and they get guys like Ruby Walsh to talk to them before riding the race.
Now.
But, you know, I think evidently more needs to be done to make sure that these guys are giving themselves all the space that they need.
Because ultimately, they're the only ones that can control the pace.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's a hard thing to do. You can't just introduce a rule or a law or punt out a press release and make it happen. But yeah, that, I think, is where if you could make it work, that's going to make the difference more than anything, really, that they said last week.
In terms of the likelihood that a smaller field Grand National will increase the extent to which the race numerically and in terms of quality is concentrated in a few hands. The Jockey Club considered that in the review process, that idea that, you know, should we do something about the fact that a relatively small number of stables are dominating this race numerically?
Yeah.
And they ultimately decided it was something for the sport to look at as opposed to for the Grand National to deal with directly. It's something we've spoken about on this in the past, and Chris, I know something you've written lots of pieces about in terms of you said that you would like to see direct action taken. Yeah. I've said in the past in columns, I've referenced it again today, I wondered if a handful of win and you're in races during the winter might help, in that if you win the Beecher, I had a particularly bold idea, I'd like to see the 4 mile on New Year's Day revive, because that's not going to dip a chase anymore, that card. Of the 4 mile, and that would be a big centrepiece of New Year's Day, you win your way into the Grand National. Is that something, not that particular race, but just general terms, Pete, win and you're in races, might that help in terms of giving other connections a chance to get in? Now, obviously, the Superbike stables might win them as well, but would that be a helpful move?
Well, I mean, the problem with the winning, it's a nice idea.
Yeah, nice idea.
I like
idea.
Your idea.
Thank
yes,
you.
I can see
you.
Why you put it in a column. Very well read column,
thank
I'm sure.
You. You're very sweet.
there's this review panel, isn't there?
Yes.
The Grand National Review Panel. So theoretically, you could have a horse who wins a winning year in race who gets to the declaration stage and they say, well, that horse don't jump well enough. Or he doesn't. So that's a potential problem. Although, you know, not an insurmountable problem.
No.
You know, something we.
You'd hope if they won a Welsh National or a 4 mile or a beach chase that they're fine on that front, but
very possible. But I don't know. It would take away greatly from the race if it's the same people, the same colours winning year in year out. And obviously, there's the point that you made earlier about Manila Times wouldn't have got in the 34 runner race. It would have got in the 34 runner race because JP had 5 runners in the race. So and they'd have been clever enough to get the horse up. So do you know what I mean? It's not like it was a little like. Stable doing it that way, then they could have manipulated it to get the horse.
Blimey,
if they needed to. I know it's a strange thought that people might manipulate the handicap system, but a lot of these changes. I just wonder how much of it's about this appealing to the broad. They talk so much, the Jockey Club and the BHA, about sort of this undecided middle. These people who kind of are open to the
middle
idea
ground.
Of it. Yeah, I wonder how much of it's about not about. What you think, Chris, because you like the Grand National and you'll go every year, but about people who might think about buying tickets.
Yeah.
And these are all on the path.
But also that group of people who could, in theory, go either way in terms of could see the Animal Rising lot and think, oh, they're talking sense. Or they could think, well, those millions of people watching the Grand National, they must be right.
I mean, I agree with you that is something that needs to be done. You know, there's like a PR battle that the sport needs to win. But you don't have to cut the field size to do that. You know, that's a really dramatic thing that we've been resisting doing for 39 years. They, as we saw last week, they had a package of measures which they could easily have presented last week as, you know, being a significant alteration to the circumstances of the race that gave us a you know, bigger chance of, you know, happier outcomes in the future. I don't see why this specific change has to be made. I worry that some of the impetus for this change within the Jockey Club has come from people who have no particular love for jump racing in general or the National in particular. And when they see things happen like happened in April, you know, those guys get pretty fed up with the race. You know, okay, it's done us well over the years, providing a ton of money and bringing in people to, you know, they start by watching the National, don't they? And then they grow to love the rest of the sport. But I think there's some people specifically who are committed to flat racing who could just do without it now. They think the race has become a liability. It brings a level of scrutiny and criticism which is applied to the whole of the sport, which sort of comes to us through the Grand National. And if the National did not exist, I think these people believe that the criticism would not follow either.
And we should say, of course, the Jockey Club would not agree with that. So Soleil Kavarman, who's been leading the communications on this, is very passionate about the the Grand National.
Indeed,
job,
but I mean, we're not going to say that she had the final call on all of these changes.
Yeah, you know, clearly be a
she would have been a voice in the discussion. But again, because they haven't produced any kind of detailed report, we don't know exactly, you know, what was the process or who were the final arbiters. You know.
I guess we need to move on. Just wrapping this up. Last year's Grand National, again, millions of viewers, was all over newspapers, loads of betting on the race, mass media coverage. Aintree was still very busy. That ultimately, I thought, was still a positive outcome for the race. But going forward, I'm a glass half full guy, generally. I still retain positivity for the great race. Do you retain positivity for the great race?
Well, how are we defining positivity?
Well, would
in the sense that you've talked about...
Would you be confident that if we were having this discussion in 10 years' time, we would be talking about a healthy Grand National at that point with the future?
I think we'd be talking about a modified Grand National.
Modified from where we are now?
Yeah. I think this path to a high-class staying handicap chase is where we're on, when we'll have big stables with big prize money and doing it that way. And I think that's the path we're on. Still think there'll be a Grand National, still think people will want to go, and you know, there'll still be some you know, wider appeal, people still want to bet and all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
But I think more will come, because the race, like Chris says, it invites so much scrutiny that you know, people almost feel obliged to tinker a little bit.
Yeah.
You're the same?
Well, look, when it comes around again, I'll try and make the best of it. And you know, I'm sure there'll be 34 very interesting stories to be told, and it'll still be really hard to pick the winner. We hope for the best. I'm afraid it's clearly not going to be the race that you and I grew up loving.
No.
What I particularly worry about that is that, you know, we're not handing on to the next generation of potential racing fans the same sort of magnet that drew us in. I feel kind of grateful to the generations before us that they were able to sort of keep it going in the form that it was when we were young.
Yeah, but I guess, again, the alternative point of view is that when we were passed on the Grand National baton, society maybe had different perspectives than what society has now.
That card can be overplayed, because, you know, I found a debate from Hansard just the other day from the 50s where they were talking about, the, you know, people were talking about, is this the right thing? Are we doing the right thing with this race? You know, sometimes bad things happen. I fear now that... our leaders are just more likely to, you know, when bad news happens, you know, rather than stand up and say, well, look, I can explain this, you know, it's not what you think, you don't quite understand, you know, because, they just sort of run away from public opinion. They say, no, you're right, yes, we should change this.
And they also hear public opinion much more through social media, and whether that's a representation of public opinion or it's just a small group
like
of people who are very vocal.
Big megaphone is what it is.
But it
encourages groupthink. You could see in the days after the race in April, there was lots of people who sort of stimulating each other and talking about field size. And it was like a consensus emerged in the days after the National, specifically on Twitter, where people going, yeah, it's field size, that's the thing. It was like after the Guineas, when you get the fast finishing fourth and everyone goes, oh, that's the Derby winner. And then it gets stuffed to Epsom.
And they're not always generous, are they?
Which
they're not all talked like generous. Who did?
Oh, it's yes.
But not all the
generous.
The majority aren't like that.
Gosh, you fished that one out of the. Was that 32 years ago?
Well, I was once a young man.
Yes, it's a bit like the gay trip system. It worked once, and then everyone remembers it.
We should probably move on. Before we do move on, I need to tell you that the Racing Post Members Club has a fantastic offer at the moment. You can get your first 3 months of membership for 50% of the normal price. More details here. Hi there, our second story this week goes back to Tuesday last week, when the British 2024 fixture list was unveiled. And Pete Scargill, it wasn't like a normal fixture list unveiling.
No, and normally this would be the story that we'd be talking about all week.
Because we've got time now.
Well, this is it. This is it. But I mean,
you know, wrap it up, Pete. Come on.
I know. I'm going on and on. We have premierisation is upon us, Lee, or nearly upon us. So we've got this revised system where we're going to promote our best races better. We're going to showcase them better. We're going to make better use of time and space. So we're going to have less clutter Saturday afternoons. We're going to race on Sunday evenings. We're going to race in the morning sometimes. And the idea is that it's going to be great and everyone's going to make lots more money and people aren't going to sell their horses abroad.
Yeah.
And that's the ambition. So it's size-wise, it's roughly the same. They've shaved a little bit off the edges. But the main thing is it's this premierisation thrust where we're going to showcase what's best in Britain and it's going to be positive out the other end. So goes the theory.
Okay, you've brought that together very nicely indeed. I guess the overarching question is to you, is it going to work?
I don't know. And I don't know. I don't know because nobody knows, do they? No one knows. And the BHA have basically admitted, we don't know, but we've got to try.
Yeah.
That's basically their argument is, we don't know what's going to happen, we've got to try. And the arguments are strong enough, which is, people are betting less on racing.
Yep.
People are going to racing less. There are fewer runners in races. Yep. All stuff that we've reported on extensively in the racing
space. Absolutely. Yep.
And if somebody comes from Hong Kong or America to buy your horse or the Middle East, you say, thank you very much, I'll take that money because I'm not going to win it in prize money. So, and this is causing the issue.
That doesn't strike me as a very new development, though, has it? I mean, that's.
No, premierisation's the new development, Chris. Yeah,
okay.
Come on, man.
But I don't see that that's going to stop a sort of casual trade in 90 rated horses to Hong Kong, is it?
Is it?
Well, I suppose what they're saying is that if we can get more money into the top end of the sport and make these races at these 170 premier fixtures more competitive, offering deeper purses, then your individual who's selling the horse to Hong Kong might not be as incentivised to do that.
Well, I'll believe that when I see it.
Well, in terms of what we might believe then, here's what I'll tell you what I think. I think that in terms of will this bring more money into the sport, I think it probably will, just because if you spread betting opportunities out over a longer period in the day.
More money than if they hadn't done anything.
Yes, yeah. I think if you spread the betting opportunities out, I think logic dictates that you probably will, because you're not, in effect, having meetings and races that get overlooked because punters haven't got time to think.
But that has to make up for some losses elsewhere.
Well, yes, so that's a fair point as well. In terms of, will this help us tell British racing's top end story better? I have real reservations because it seems to me that ITV do that anyway. ITV is premierisation in that sense. And unless you dictate to a mainstream broadcaster that you're going to do the sport different, and instead of doing 10 races in one programme, you're going to do 4 races, and you're going to have lots of features in between the races so you can tell these stories, that's not that,
and they don't want that, Lee.
And the sport doesn't want that.
How does the sport generate income? It generates
by
income
by people betting on races.
By people betting on races. So you have levy turnover, and you have media rights, and obviously you have owners putting their money in. So having 4 races on ITV and learning about all the stories, and like they do around the Breeders' Cup, all that stuff.
And NBC
you
type
end up crying,
program.
You're crying away at these things like Cody's Wish and all that sort of stuff. That's no good because you've missed 3 races that people could be betting on.
So
I mean, I don't know. Do you feel that? In the end, a lot of this is being driven for betting stuff, isn't it? Nobody wants to go racing on Sunday evening, so that's to do with betting.
And I think they'd be, and in some ways, I think if you look in some other jurisdictions, say Australia, they are much more comfortable at being perfectly open and saying, we are doing everything here to try and boost betting turnover, because we know that's what brings money into the sport. The reservation I've got is that if this, in effect, is almost like a rebrand, a revamp of the top end of British horse racing, any revamp or rebrand needs a hell of a lot of cash to be spent on marketing and promoting it. We ain't got that.
No, and we don't even seem to have a plan about how it's going to be promoted yet.
Not yet. There's work streams.
Which
is fine, because people have got to work on it, but it obviously is October the 16th today, and New Year's Day is the first day, isn't it? So we need to know relatively
soon. The
clock
is ticking. And ideally there would be promotion before the thing started, in theory. I suppose they're not really promoting January racing very heavily, are they?
So I don't know, you've got Winter Millions and you've got, is it Peter Marsh Chase? Well, Tommy Whittle, I don't know, he's one of those ones.
If they revive that 4 mile on New Year's Day at Cheltenham, that'd be really good.
I tell you, I could get on board with premiarisation if I thought it meant more promotion for the Peter Marsh, but I suspect that was not always the big aim.
I used to love that day.
I get them trying, and I think they've got to try it, and obviously they'll be shouted down.
There's nothing wrong with trying new things, is there?
There's a worrying word of the use, cascade, in one of the documents the BHA put down, the idea that you put more money in the top and it cascades down.
Oh, trickle-down economics.
Always works.
This is it.
And to go back to our Grand National discussion, all the money and intentions going into the top with the idea that everybody benefits. But don't the people at the top just get more cake? The cake don't get bigger, the people at the top get more cake. So, you know, like guys like me who have got horses in small stables with everyday people, unless we get lucky, it's going to be more horses for the big stuff.
They would say is that when people are buying cake, they look at the big, sexy, fancy cakes on the top shelf, and when they get into that sort of cake, they then ultimately might start thinking, oh, I quite like that little flapjack on the bottom level, and we'll have a bit of that, and you're the flapjack.
I knew I'd stimulate you with cake. Classes,
conversation's taken an unexpected
turn. Yeah, I've rather lost control of this one. Go on, Chris.
I was just going to say that I like the word experiment. They've made it clear this is a two-year thing, and then they'll review. Again, they're doing so many different things, it's going to be hard to pull out cause and effect. But at least they've committed to the possibility that we may get to the end of this and go, well, that was a load of mints. Let's do things how we used to do them. You know, unlike what's happening at Aintree next year, which is just forever.
And we shouldn't overlook the fact that British racing does need a major shot in the arm. And if this works, that's a great thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You do have to try new stuff. This wouldn't have been anywhere in my top 10 of ways to reorganise the game, but we're doing it, so let's cross our fingers, right?
Yeah, my fingers are crossed all the time on many fronts, including in relation to writing colour pieces about Frankie Dettori's farewell tour, which I seem to have done pretty much every other week through 2024.
He had his fingers crossed when he said he was going to retire, didn't he?
Yeah, well, funny you say that. So, our final story this week, we're going to have a little rapid fire round at the end, just to don't start. I know a lot of you might be a bit bored of the whole Dettori story. Don't be switching off now, there's more to come. But, so, Frankie, now we had a special show last week talking about the affordability files. Had we not had a special show, I would no doubt have been sat in this chair saying that the previous Saturday at Newmarket on Sun Chariot Day, I went to Newmarket thinking, in surprise from the Sun Chariot States, I'm going to write another Frankie Dettori story. But it changed slightly. There had been rumours for some time that Frankie was going to spend the early part of next year in California, thereby extending his farewell tour. And very helpfully for a colour writer at Newmarket, John Gosden started talking about how his man isn't going to retire. He ain't packing up yet, he said. He'll carry on into California, into the Middle East, and then couldn't rule out riding in Britain in the future. Now, whether that flushed out an announcement from Frankie or not, I don't know. But on Thursday morning, I was dragged from my bed earlier than expected following a phone call that revealed that Frankie Dettori was going to go on BBC Breakfast at 8:45 a.m. and announce that he was going to continue his riding career.
That is early. Goodness
that me. Was at 7:22 the phone call came.
What?
Yeah.
Do phones even work at that time of day?
Well, I was hoping mine wouldn't do at that time, but it did do. So we spoke on Thursday morning, we got a story out pretty quickly, and it said more than I think maybe I had been expecting, because not only is Frankie Dettori going to ride in California in January and February, he is becoming a full-time American jockey. Thought that the most interesting line in some ways was, it could be 3 months, could be 3 years. He isn't because he can't rule out riding in Britain in the future, particularly until after Kitco British Champions Day, which has been sold as a farewell to Frankie. Yeah. Surely he'll be riding at Royal Ascot next year, although he can't really talk about that much right now. But the thrust of this story is that Frankie Dettori, the world's most famous jockey, is off to become a full-time American-based rider from the start of 2024. Pete Scargill, discuss.
I'm not sure I've got anything to add.
Really?
Perfectly summed up, Lee.
You are lovely.
Perfectly summed up. Well, obviously everyone had the opportunity to say, I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah. Did you know it was going to happen?
I read about it happening, but I didn't know it was going to happen.
No.
But no, it's a relief we've got to this point to some extent, because the rumours have just been building and the noise around it was deafening, really, wasn't it, to some extent. So it's good that it's come out. It's the only option Frankie left himself, wasn't it? He could only go to California.
Yeah, unless he completely changed his mind and...
But it's too much of a build-up. He couldn't just go, do you know what, lads? Yeah. I'll see you at Wolverhampton in February.
Yeah. And he's also made the point that if he was thinking about now is the time to stop, you almost need to do something completely different anyway. Mm. Otherwise, you're back on the same treadmill doing the same things.
Yeah, so the weather's going to be better. Yeah. He's got contacts out there. I am sure if he wanted to, he could do some media stuff with the American market.
They won't turn him down.
I'm surprised that he's done it in the way he has, that it's sort of been announced. I thought it'd sort of sneak up and there'd be videos on Instagram.
Okay.
He'd go about it that way.
But I think it was all about the visa, wasn't it, in the end? You know, once
it took a while to get that,
then you sort of felt free to say stuff. I mean, it's always the way, isn't it? You know, you can't make a guy sign a contract saying he is going to retire forever, that's it.
No.
And I'm sure when he announced it, he really felt like doing it.
Yeah.
And now he feels differently. You know, such is life. If we're sincere in saying, you know, oh, he'll be a great loss to the game, then we've got to be happy that he's not going to be lost
absolutely.
To the game. He'll still be around.
Yeah.
And having said that, if he's riding in California, then as far as most of British racing is concerned, you know, he might as well be retired, because we're not going to see any of his races.
British racing is probably ready to move on from Frankie to some extent as well. I mean, I think the people involved in it, they've had a year to get used to it, the succession planning and stuff that's gone into place.
Yeah.
People, you know, from a marketing and the crowd point of view, people will be disappointed they won't get to see doing flying dismounts and what have you, although pretty good for his ankles, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I mean, I think racing in general is ready to say, over here, is ready to say, thank you, Frankie. We don't mind you going off to California. Hey, if you come back to Ascot, that'd be lovely. But it's not
sure
going to be the same.
Exactly. If you're John and Thady Gosden and you're all Patricia Thomson and you've got Inspire running in the Queen Anne Stakes on the opening day of Royal Ascot next year, you are surely going to think about putting in a phone call to your friend, Mr. Dettori, to say, would you fancy just popping back for a...
But, I mean, his absence, as you say, well, that gives room for new guys to come through and new stars to emerge and for us to form new allegiances and, you know, a bit more space in the national papers for, you know, feature interviews about other people for once. So I think that's interesting and positive for the future of the sport.
Did he tell you whether he's going to the jungle or not, Lee?
He didn't. To be fair, I didn't ask, partly because I was still quite bleary-eyed. And I'd been thinking I'd be having my bowl of all bran, but instead I was doing it. No, he didn't do. Now
it's 101, isn't it? I mean, he's past the post.
Yes, and we should move on in a second. But I think that was certainly the expectation if we were thinking he was going to finish his riding career in Hong Kong in December.
Yeah.
But if you're off to do another a full year in America, maybe more than that, does it look a bit off if you're then spending 2 weeks in the jungle with Christopher Biggins or whatever?
Is it going to be Christopher Biggins?
Well, I've no idea.
Yeah,
he might have done it before.
It's a fair point. And how do they introduce him? You know, Frankie Dettori, a jockey who is not yet retired.
Maybe not.
Finally, it baffles
me that anybody wants to sign up for that show and you know, spend 2 weeks eating cockroaches or whatever it is that they do.
Yeah. I mean, I'd much rather let the chow. Anyway. We should move on. Rapid fire. This is a completely new addition to the front page. We've never done this before. We've never had a week.
It's bound to go well, then.
Bound to go well. Cross your fingers. So, who wants to go first in saying a few words about City of Troy in the Dewhurst? Pete, you were there.
I was there. He was magnificent.
Yeah.
I felt that he was allowed to control the race slightly.
Yeah.
He does have an ability. He's one of these horses that kills others with his mid-race speed. He's really fast and able to maintain that acceleration. So I was very impressed. He's a horse who seems to have all the right temperaments and attributes to be a very good horse. And he'll look very good finishing second to Rosalian in the Guineas next
year. Chris.
There you go. I mean, I really appreciate the way that they ramped up the chat, especially
he's
Michael Tabor.
He's our Frankel, says Michael Tabor.
And then he sort of says, we might all have egg on our faces. And, I mean, you go back, 8 years was it, to Air Force Blue, won the Dewhurst, and then was saying, this is undeniably the best 2 year old we've ever had. Yeah. And I mean, maybe it was true, but he wasn't a very good 3 year old.
No.
You can't be sure, can you? I don't know if anybody's worked out how you can tell which of those 2 year olds are definitely going to hold their form to the next year and still be dominant. But it feels like the Guineas build up has already started, and we're going to get to that first week in May with that sort of you know, electricity of, you know, is he actually that good still, or, you know, are things all about to go the shape of the pair? It really adds to something when you've got a horse who's potentially great, but you can't just assume that he's past the post.
Doesn't it? More about Frankel shortly. I adored City of Troy on Saturday. I adored him in the Superlative Stakes. I adored Ace Impact in the Arc. We ain't going to see him again.
Huge surprise, that one. Yeah. Well, I mean,
money talks.
He's got to the point where he's just so blooming valuable.
Yeah.
You and I can sit here and say, you know, if he were mine, I'd carry on racing him. And I really do think that's true in my case. You know what I mean? Yes, there's a big bag of money there, but also, how many other chances are you going to have a horse
like
exactly.
him?
And again, there's a responsibility on the media, I think. You always got to learn from these things. If we talk up a horse too early, then this is the consequence. You know, it's at least partly reputation that creates his value. And we do have to make the point always that unless a horse comes back at four and proves they can give weight and a beating to the three-year-olds, then there's still something to prove. And he didn't do that.
He had a lot to prove, didn't he, in that sense?
He did. I mean, he was brilliant in the Arc, and he was brilliant in the Jockey Club. I mean, he's clearly an extremely talented horse.
Yeah.
But he did only start racing at the start of the year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which is a shame. And I don't know how much there was about it, but it's almost a bit like Flightline. It's almost this, they're unbeaten, and I don't get this cult of a horse has to be unbeaten to be the best. I don't understand. Maybe it started with Frankel, I don't know. But if a horse is unbeaten, it's everything to maintain that status.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know if you can maintain the status, then your horse is great. And if you get beaten, you're not so great anymore. I don't get it. Of course they do. Come back.
Absolutely.
My admiration always goes to those horses that just turn up for the big race because it's the big race. And it doesn't matter if the circumstances are favourable or not. And they get beaten a few times, but they always turn up and run honestly. Those are the horses worth treasuring, I think.
Absolutely. If we talk about big money, then Martin Cruddas, the ARC chief executive, wrote a letter to the DCMS Secretary of State, Culture Secretary, Lucy Fraser, last week, Chris, in which he spoke about the danger that affordability checks, formalised affordability checks, place on horse racing and predicted a cost to the sport of £250 million over 5 years. It takes the story on, this long-running story, to an extent. So the big question is, will the government listen?
Yeah, that is the big question. God knows they've got no excuse for not knowing the potential consequences now for, you know, for our sport, for our industry. And it's, you know, about time that they did something about it. You know, I think of horse racing as natural Tory heartland. You would think that by now we would have their full attention.
Yeah.
But I don't see any sign of white smoke yet. I don't see anybody riding to the rescue, unfortunately. I mean, perhaps they're just sort of rabbits caught in the headlight, you know, because things are not going politically all that brilliantly for them at the moment.
And they
seem to think they need to turn around the economy to have any chance at the next election. Maybe they just can't think beyond that. But, you know, we need help from the corridors of power imminently.
Yeah. Martin was saying that they should pause the introduction of affordability, which seems sensible in the sense that we still don't know yet if we can have frictionless affordability checks. But
to do that, somebody's got to sort of get a shepherd's crook on the gambling commission.
Absolutely. And that doesn't sound like an easy process, that gambling commission. Again, last week, just quickly, Philip Davis, Tory MP, spoke about an FOI request that went into the gambling commission asking it to reveal the substance of a previous consultation, and they basically refused to do it.
Well, this is it. I mean, quite a few people have put in freedom of information requests. And they're a difficult they're a difficult organisation to get any information out of, you know, because you know they're in the glare at the moment and being scrutinised like never before. A lot of the time, as you found out with the affordability files, because you ask them a straight question, no answer or a roundabout answer. So, look, it's the thing with the letter, just quickly, is that there's been a lot of talk about racing not putting its case across strongly enough or more often enough. So it's good that something has been put out and, you know, made clear on that front to put racing's situation forward, you know.
I want to finish with one last link. Talking about, you ask a question to the Gambling Commission, they don't give you an answer. We asked you a question. We asked you, who was your favourite racehorse
of all time, who is the People's Champion? And it could have been in terms of the final, Desert Orchid, Red Rum, Corto Star, Demon or Frankel. It was Frankel. Chris, were you surprised?
Yeah, a bit. I would have thought the framing of the thing, a People's Champion, leads you directly to either Red Rum or Desert Orchid, doesn't it? But yeah, there may have been an element of the jumps vote being split because you've got four jumpers and one flat horse. And so, I mean, yeah, people could say Franco won. He beat all your old slow chasers. But another way of looking at it is there was a 73% vote for a jumper to one kind or another to win that race.
I think as well, as someone who primarily, predominantly, more slightly more jumps than flat, these things tend to have a lot of recency bias. And sure, I was just actually quite encouraged that Red Rum and Desert Orchid, given that they ran in the mainly the 70s and 80s, that they actually did so well in something that was largely framed around social media followers. You know, the fact that they still polled so well shows you what an impact they made. And in terms of Frankel's victory, Frankel's entourage, camp, and the people that nominated Frankel all made clear they were voting for Frankel, but they were voting for Frankel and Sir Henry Cecil.
The story around Frankel was wonderful, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Told by you in your piece, I could tell when you were speaking with everybody how much it still resonates, even if Frankel can't eat a carrot properly.
Okay, at this point then, we always say who has had the winning story. As we said, massive week of stories. Frank Dettori, Fixtureless, and the Grand National. But Chris, the Grand National is the world's most famous horse race. It has to be the winning story, doesn't it?
Well, I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, well, it is.
Even though you never let me win, so this would be a first time.
Well, you have I've this
managed
week.
Not to miss the goal on this occasion.
You can get rid of your anger and bitterness now.
Well, it took more than that, mate.
getting rid of some views. So, yeah, we couldn't have done it on Ace Impact, could we?
No. The director is no doubt frustrated that we've been talking for so long about the Grand National. It has to be the winning story. He wants us to stop. We must stop now. So, Chris Cook, Pete Scargill, thank you for joining us. Thank you for watching. We'll be back next week. Until then, bye-bye.